Begin the current daf Masechta Baba Basra daf Kuf Mem Hei. Begin on the fourth line down at the top of the Yomid, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf, and that is the Gemara had asked a contradiction from a brisa on the halacha of our Mishnah regarding this halacha of Shushbinis being returned. And that is, the Mishnah had said that if the father had sent one of the brothers when he was still alive to do Shushbinis, which has to be paid back when the father passes away, and that son goes and gets married, says the Mishnah, it's Chazeris La'emtza, goes back in the shid by all the other brothers. Whereas the Braisa says that, no, it goes back to that only son. So that the Gemara had three answers, and the third and final answer was said by Shmuel, who said, yes, the halacha really is like the Braisa, that it's returned to that particular son. However, the halacha of a Mishnah is talking about when that son passes away, and another brother is Meyabim, that wife. Now, that, therefore, as the Gemara ultimately concludes, was talking about that Shushbin shared the Sheva Brachas with that boy, with that one who got married. So therefore, there is the obligation to pay it back. But since he's dead, so he has to pay back to the inheritors, which does not go to the Yavim, although the Yavim generally inherits the whole thing, because the Yavim in Halacha, as the Pasuk says, is like a Bechir, and the Bechir does not take his portion in what's called Ro, what's fit to come, what's owed, but it's not Muchzik, it's not in possession at the time of the death. Now, the Gemara, however, had asked, but why is there an obligation at all of the Shushbin to return in that situation where, before the Gemara gives the answer and knows that it's after the Sheva Brachas, but he shouldn't have to pay back at all because he could say, what do you mean, give me my friend and I'll rejoice with him and then I'll go ahead and give him the gift back. Because the Braisa had taught, which is going to be a subject we're going to discuss in this daf, regarding, depends on the Minhag HaMakom, if the woman gets Kedushin, which is generally like the ring, and then something happens and then they break off the marriage before it happens. So there's different customs regarding if the Kedushin, if the ring has to be given back or not. Now that Rav Yisrael Bar Abba, in the name of Marokva, in the name of Shmuel, had said that a halacha of the bris was only taught if the woman passed away. But if the husband passed away, then everyone would agree that you don't have to give it back. What's the reason? It's because in that situation, the woman could say, give me my husband and I'll marry him. I'm not the problem. I'll fulfill my obligation of getting married, which is the stipulation of getting the Kedushin ring. If she dies, fine, then you could say maybe it depends on Minhag HaMakom. And if he's dead, then everyone would agree that she could keep it. So therefore the Gemara says, here also we should say that he could say, give me my Shushbin and I'll rejoice with him. And the fact that he's dead, I don't have to give it back to anyone, not to Emtsa, to share with all the brothers. And then Rav Yisrael said that here we're talking about that he did rejoice with him already. And that, as the Rashbam had explained, that was the custom, that they would first rejoice in the chasna and the simcha, and then give the gift afterwards. So he did rejoice, and the obligation of returning the shushbinis did take effect. It's just that now, right after Sheva Brachas, he passed away. So that's where we say you give it back la'emtza to all of them, because he's dead, and therefore it's not a contradiction of the brisa. Now it's on that context that the Gemara continues and asks on this halacha of Yisrael Bar Abba in the name of Shmuel, and says that actually, le'ma tenuli bali ve'esmachi me'tanoihi. Let's say that concept, which the Gemara had used in regards to the halacha of Shmuel himself, which was answering the contradiction of the Mishnah, the Braisa, which was based on this halacha concept, the way they were defining that Braisa, and said that depending on Minhag HaMakom, you have to give back the Kedushin, it depends if she dies. But Shmuel had said, if the husband passed away, then everyone would agree that she could keep the Kedushin ring, because give me my husband, I'll rejoice with him. And that says, the Gemara says, that we could say is not a universal halacha. And actually, it's a machlokes tanoim, where according to one opinion, she would have to give back the Kedushin even though the chasan passed away. And according to the other opinion, she would not have to give it back. Where do we see that it's not so obvious that it's a halacha of Shmuel, and actually it's a machlokes tanoim? The Tanya went in the following braisa. Hama'arasa se'isha. Somebody gets engaged to a woman. So the halacha is, besula goyve masayim. If the husband dies or he divorces her, as Rashbam points out, must be talking about that he had written her ksuba to take effect when they were engaged, because if he did not write her ksuba at the time of Erisin, which many times is written at the time of Nisuin, then that's actually a question in Masechet Ksubis, which is not resolved, not paid tesim beis. So it's someone that he wrote her ksuba when they got engaged. So halach is, if they break that off, if he dies or she gets divorced, so the virgin collects 200 zuz, Valmana, and a widow, when she was getting married, she was a widow already. Then when they get divorced, or when she becomes a widow again, she gets 100 zuz. Now, continues the first opinion. If it's the custom of that place, which he was going to explain how to qualify what is being discussed over here in regards to the case of this brisa. But it's saying that if the custom is to return the kedushin in case of a certain circumstances, then it has to be returned. If the custom is not to return the Kedushin, then it's not returned. That's Divrei Reb Nosson. B'huda Hanasi Omer, B'huda Hanasi says, Be'emes Omer, in truth they said, Mokim Shenogu L'Hachzim Achzirin, if the custom of the place is to return it, it's returned. And Mokim Shenogu Shalai L'Hachzirin Achzirin, if the custom of the place is not to return it, then it's not returned. Which the Gemara is going to explain this, as the Gemara asks, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi Hanit Tanakama. He's saying the same exact thing. What's Be'emes Omer, in truth they said? Rabbi Yisi said the same exact words. Elalav rather says the Gemara, isn't it obvious that Tnuli Bali ve'esmachima ikibenayu, that this is their machlekes, is this case that was said by Rabbi Yisrael Abba as if it was an obvious halacha, seems to be that this is the machlekes Tanoim regarding if a woman could say, well, give me my husband, I'll rejoice with him, and therefore I shouldn't lose out the Kedushin because it's not my fault. That's what they're disagreeing about. V'chasur mechzen, their words missing, and this is what it should say in the Braisa. Hama'ara says, Isha, if someone gets engaged to a woman, so Besula gave him a sign. So when it ends, when he dies or when she gets divorced, so the virgin gets 200 zuz and the mana gets a mana. Says the first opinion. Bamed, from when do we say this? The Hadr Bei Ihu, he backs out and he wants to divorce her. So therefore she's gonna take Iksuba, besides for the Kedusha. Now as Rashbam points out, the same thing would apply not only if he divorces her that he backs out, but even if he would die. It's just because the Gemara wants to explain that independently to say that, oh, because he dies, because in that situation the woman could say, well, Tanuli Bali Basmachimai. So therefore here it talks about not him dying, but rather talking about him backing out. So that's if he backs out, if he divorces her, so then you have to give the Basula gets 200 and Amona gets 100. Aval Mesa, but if she dies, so Malkum Shinogu Lahaksimachzirin. So that's as we had explained the Brisa on the previous daf. So if she dies, if the custom is, if she dies between the engagement and the marriage, so if the custom is to give back the ring in that circumstance because they never consummated the relationship, so then you have to give it back. Malkum Shinogu Shulag Lahaksimachzirin. If the custom is not to give it back, then you don't give it back. That's how the Gemara is explaining this right now. Now, that is the qualification, Bidaf Kishamesihi. But this, the first opinion of Rabbi Yisi holds, that's only if she died. But if he died, then she doesn't have to give back the ring of Kedushin, even though they never got married. My time, what's the reason? Because he should time Tanuli Bali Vasmachme Rabbi Yisi holds, because she could say, give me my husband, I'll rejoice with him. If you don't give him back to me, which is like the way Shmuel had said it, then she doesn't have to give it back. And that is Vasar Bihuda Nasi Lameima, and he disputes that. And he came to say that no, but Emes Amun, truth they said, that it doesn't make a difference. Bein meis hu or bein meis hi, whether if he dies or if she dies, malkum shenogu l'hachzir machzirin, if the custom is to return it, it is returned, even if he's the one that died. Malkum shenogu shalai l'hachzir machzirin, if the custom is not to give it back, then it's not given back, even if she died. V'loi matzi amr, she cannot say, even in the situation where he's the one that died, tenuli bali v'asamachem, I give my husband, I'm rejoice with him. So seemingly, this machlekes of Rav Yisi bar Abba, Omar Mar Okfa, in the name of Shmuel, is a machlekes tanoim, which is Rabbi Yisi holds like that opinion, and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi disagrees with that. That says the Gemara Loi, no. The Kula Alma Yechela Shetoyme Tinuli Bali Ve'esmachem, everyone agrees to Halach of Shmuel, that if the husband died, the woman could say, well, give me my husband, I'll rejoice with him. I don't have to give back the ring, it's not my fault, I'm ready to fulfill my part of the obligations, and the fact that he's dead is not my fault, I don't lose the Gedushin ring. Udemishu Kula Amal Pligi, and therefore, like we explained, if he died, no one's going to disagree that the Kedushin does not have to give him back, because she could say, give me my husband, I'll rejoice with him, like Rabbi Yisrael Abba had said in explanation of the Brice in the previous stuff. Ki Pligi Shemesehi. To the contrary, the Machlekes was when she dies. So what's the Machlekes? We had assumed on the previous stuff, from that Brice, that if she dies, then it depends on the Minhag HaMakom. Here it seems to be that that's not so simple. It seems to be a Machlekes. Here, their disagreement is regarding, do we say that when it comes to Kedushin, it's given to be there permanently, which is that if she dies and he doesn't merit to marry her, still he lost it and the money, the ring, is never going to be given back to him. What's the machlekes? From Nassan Sabri says, Kedushin lav letibu nitnu. No, Kedushin that's given to a woman is not given there permanently to be lost. Therefore, that would depend on Minhag HaMakom. It's, if the Minhag HaMakom is to give it back, then you have to give it back. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi Savar, but he disagreed. He said, no, Kedushin l'tibun it. No, the Kedushin is given to be permanently over there. Now, that the Gemara asked, but how can you say that? V'amakom shenogu l'hachzir machzirin katani. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's own words said that it depends on the Minhag HaMakom. If the custom is to give it back, he says it's given back. So how can you say he holds that it's given l'tibun, that it's there permanently? That the Gemara explains, no hachikama. Rabbi Yehuda holds that it's given it permanently, and it's done. Once you give the Kedushin, you're never getting it back. When he said that it depends on the minhag ha'makom if it's given back to the husband or not, that was talking about something else. V'sevloi noizvadai, Rabbi Yehuda was saying that, however, most definitely, what I do agree to you, that it does depend on the minhag ha'makom, that was regarding the gifts that the chassan gives to the kala after they get engaged. There, makom shenogu lahachzer machzirin. There, if the custom is to give it back, if it ends up falling through where she ends up dying, then you have to give that back. Which those are certain jewelry that the chassan sends after they're engaged. But regarding the kedushin itself, there most definitely Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi held that that's given and that's you're never getting that back, even if she passes away. And therefore, it's not no one disagrees with the halacha of Shmuel. Moreover, says the Gemara for this interpretation, based on what we just said, Vahani Tanoi, the Tanoi that we're going to shortly quote, are Kahani Tanoi, are exactly like the Tanam that we were just describing, which we said the Machlik is Rabbi Anasi and Rabbi Yisi is regarding if Kedushin Ali Tibu and Nitnu, if they're given there permanently. That's the same Machlikis that we find in the different Brises, so it's not so difficult to say that this is exactly what they're disagreeing about. The time like learning the Brisa. Kitcha Bekikr. If a man engages a woman with a kikar of silver, which is either 25 or some say 60 mana, now the Gemara is going to shortly explain the machlekes that the Brice is talking about based on what we just defined. So the first opinion says, Besula gave a messiah. The Besula, as we said, when she collects her ksuba, she collects a ksuba of 200 zuz, which is worth 2 mana, which is 50 shekel, as the Pasuk says, Kemoyer ha-besulis, which is the value of when you marry a Besula. Now, what this first opinion is saying is that besides for the kedushin that she will keep, she also takes a ksuba. And that's because what ultimately is, a kikar is 25 mana, a mana is 25 shkalim, a shekel is 4 dinar, which is 4 zuzim. So on this first opinion, it says that she gets to keep the kedushin, and moreover, she gets a ksuba, a basula gets 200, v'amana mana, and the widow gets 100 divri of meir. Behudaim, he disagrees. He says, no, Besula gave a Messiah b'mana mana. Yeah, the Besula takes 200 and the widow takes 100 from the kikar of the Kedushin, meaning that she was engaged with that, so she gets to take off from that what her ksuba value was. But a Machzeres le'asashar, she has to give back the rest of the Kedushin to her chasin, meaning she does not get to keep the Kedushin. She has to give that back. She could just take off whatever her ksuba's value was. He says, as Yimov will explain his opinion shortly, if kitcha be'esrim, if he engaged her with 20 shkalim, so noisin lo shloishim chatzon, so he has to give her 30 half a shkalim. Kitcha be'shloishim, if he engaged her with 30 shkalim, noisin lo esrim chatzon, he gives her 20 half a shkalim. So says the Gemara, b'mayis kinan. What exactly is this case that you have this three remachlekes? And that is Ile Mishim Mesa, if you're going to say it's Tumar case where she died, and therefore that's why you would understand why Rabbi Huda says that she has to give him back the rest, because the old Kedushin is not Litibu and it's not given there permanently. And therefore, since she died, so it's the woman's side's fault, and therefore they have to give back the rest of the Kedushin. But then the difficulty is that Mias Laksuba, but then why would she be able to take at least the 200 if she's a Basula or 100 if she's a Mana? But if she died, a woman doesn't get a Ksuba. Ksuba is if the husband dies or if he divorces her. If she dies, she doesn't get a Ksuba. So the Elisha Mesu, so we're going to say the case is talking about where he died, the Chasin died. So therefore she collects her Ksuba. And if she's a widow, which is like the Allah of a Mana, she'll get 100. But then the question is, then Amai Machzeres Lo Yisashar, so then why would you be to say that she has to return the rest of the Kedushin money, but we established before that she could say, everyone agrees to Shmuel's halacha, Tnuli Balav Esmachima, give my husband, I'll rejoice with him, it's not my fault. Therefore, she should be allowed to keep the Kedushin money. Why, according to Behuda, then does she have to give back the rest of the Kedushin money? So, on that side, the Gemara says, V'nema Tnuli Balav Esmachima, why she should be allowed to say, give me my husband, I'll rejoice with him. So, the Elo, so what are you going to say? Be'eshis Yisrael Shazinsa. No, the case is told about regarding the wife of a non-Kayin, who she was mezana, she had an extramarital affair when she was already engaged, which halachically regarding znus is the same as marriage, and now she's coming to collect a ksuba when her husband is divorcing her because she was mezana. So that the Gemara asks ubemais. Then what would the case be talking about? Iberatzin, if she was mezana willingly, meis like ksuba, does she get a ksuba? She loses her ksuba. The elaba einus, what are you going to say? That rather she was forcibly violated, she was raped. That says the Gemara, but mishur sharile. What do you mean? Then, as the Gemara Masechta Seita in the beginning teaches us, she's still permitted to her husband, as the pasuk says, "V'hi loy nitfasa." If she was not forced then she's forbidden to her husband. But if she was forced, then she's permitted. So if the husband's still coming to divorce her, not according to the halacha of snus, then why would she have to give him back the rest of the ksuba? It's not her fault. She should be allowed to keep, like any woman that's divorced, to keep her kedushin that she originally had. So Elo, so what are you going to say? Be'ishas kayin shenen. So we're talking about a woman that was married to a kayin, who was forcibly violated, who she actually is forbidden to stay married to her husband, as the Gemara teaches in Subas Nonalafim Abeis, where the Pasuk says, V'hiloin netfasa, that she was not forced, and then she's not forbidden. Which tells us, but there is another woman, that even if she was forced, that she is forbidden to her husband. And what's that talking about? The Gemara describes as the Eishes Kayin. Now, so therefore, in this case, since she was not negligent, she was violated, so because of that, everyone would agree that she does not lose her ksuba. But it's regarding her kedushin money, her kedushin ring, that would be the machlekes. And what's the machlekes? Upa kedushin l'tibun nitnu kemiflegin. Their machlekes is regarding, as we described the previous machlekes, we wanted to show that these tanoim disagree in the same thing regarding the kedushin, if that's given permanently or not. What's the machlekes? Remeir sabe kedushin l'tibun nitnu. Remeir holds that kedushin that's given, it's given permanently, you never get it back. And therefore the woman, although that it's her fault that she's forbidden to her husband, although not totally her fault, she's not preshea, she's not negligent, she was violated, so she gets a ksuba, and the kedushin she also gets to keep, because Rebbe Meir holds it's litibunin. But Rebbe Yehuda sub alav litibunin. Rebbe Yehuda says, no, kedushin not given permanently, that is, if the husband will take responsibility if it's his fault. Here, it's, since it's not his fault, so, okay, you don't lose your ksuba because you weren't mezana beratzen, but it is still a problem with you, and therefore you have to give back the kedushin. Rabbi Yisi misafka le'ili tibun nitnu alai, and Rabbi Yisi was in doubt in this halacha if it's given permanently or not. Now, he was in doubt if it's kedushin, and therefore, like the general halacha is that when you have money that's in doubt, the halacha is chalkin that you have to split it, and therefore, she has to give him back half of the kedushin money, or she calculates that she gets to keep half, and the other half that she has to give him back, she calculates towards her ksuba, and she takes that with additional money to supplement the total amount of her ksuba. So Behilkach therefore explains the Gemara his opinion as follows. Kidsha, and the Gemara describes it in the case of an almana who her ksuba is 100 zuz, if he was Mekadisha originally be'esrim with 20 shkalim, which that's 80 zuz, as we said, a shekel is 4 zuz. So 40 out of the 80, as we said, since it's a doubtful if this kedushin money has to be given back or not, so 40 out of the 80 she has to give back to him. But she calculates that so she gets to keep half the kedushin money. That's independent of her ksuba, which she has to get paid. So now, the remaining 40, she calculates towards her ksuba. So that's why Rabbi said, Noisin lo shloshim chatzon. He has to now supplement and give her an extra 30 half a shkalim, which that's 15 shkalim, which 15 times 4, because every shekel is 4 zuz, is 60 zuz. So that, the 40 that she has from the remaining of the kedushin, which she has to give back to him, but she holds on to it, plus the additional 60 zuz, 40 plus 60, is the 100 zuz that the widow has to get. The almana gets 100 for her ksuba. So again, that's besides for the half of the kedushin money that she gets to keep on to. Kitsha b'shloshim, if he engages her with 30 shkalim, which is 120 zuz. So again, as we said, half of it she gets to keep because it's rightfully hers because it's mamon hamut basafik. The other half she gets to keep towards her ksuba, which is 60 zuz, but there's still 40 zuz that are missing from the 100 that the amana gets for her ksuba. So that's why noisin lo esem chatzoim, he gives her an additional 20 half ishkalim, which is 10, which is times 4, which is 40 zuz, which then makes it into 100 zuz. So she gets to have that 140. I mean, she gets to have the ksuba plus a half of the kedushin money. Now the Gemara concludes, Amar Avyisi b'minyumi, Amar Av Nachman, b'chamalkim shenogu l'hachzer marzirin. Wherever the custom is, when the woman passes away, to give the kedushin money back, then you have to give it back. For Targuma, and the Gemara translates, which place is that? That has that minig, is Narda. Narda has that minig, where if it's the woman that she passed away, they have to give the kedushin, you got to give the ring back to the chasm. So as the Gemara, Shar Bavel Mai, what's Allah with the rest of Bavel? Narda is a place in Bavel, what's the rest of Babylon? Rabbi Rav Yisrael, Damir Tavai, they both say that regards to Moihare, which are like Sevlainis, they're like these gifts which the chasen gives after they're engaged, that's Hadri. When the woman passed away, that has to be given back to the chasen. Now Rashbam actually says that there's actually two different types of gifts. There's what's called Moihare and there's what's called Sevlainis. The reason why he says this is because the Gemara actually tells us later on, based on the mission of Sevlainis, it already tells us this halacha, so why would we mention it two times? Rather, he says that Moihare is the money that he gives her before they that they get married at, when they're during the engagement, which is going to be written into the ksuba when they get married. That's what's called mayer, like mayer abasula, which is like the what's the name of the ksuba, in contrast to sublinus, which are just generic gifts that are given by the chasan to the kala. So besides sublinus, they're given back. So to mayer we are given back, but kedusha loy hardri. But in the rest of the bubble, the kedusha, even though it's the woman who passed away, it's not given back to the chasan. Now, however, Amar Papa, he concludes, he says, Hilchas Halacha is, Bein Shemeis Hu, Bein Shemeis Tehi, whether if he passed away the chasen, or whether Kala passed away, or Vahadu Behu, or if the chasen backed out, he divorces her, Mayri Hadri, the gifts are given back, but Kedusha Lehadri, the Kedusha is not given back. Hadri Be'ihi, but if she backs out, I feel the Kedusha Name Hadri, then even the Kedusha, the ring has to be given back to the chasen. Now, Amemer, he says, Kedusha Loi Hadri, it's not true. The Kedusha, the ring is not given back. And even though it's her, she who backed out, because it's gezeirah shema yomru, it's a decree, it's a rabbinic concern that maybe people are going to say, why is she giving him back the ring? Oh, it must have been an erroneous kedushin, must have been a mistaken kedushin, it was never valid in the first place, and that's why they backed out. So it's going to come out that maybe people are going to say, kedushin teiv samachaisa, that if this guy goes now and gets engaged to that woman's sister, which biblically does not take effect because he was already engaged to that sister and she's still alive, people are going to say that he is permitted to her. And the reason why they're going to say is because, hey, the ring was given back, must have been it was really never conditioned in the first place, which is not the case. And therefore, even if she's the one that backs out, we make her hold on to the ring, that people should not think that it was never conditioned in the first place, where in reality it was. It's just that she backed out and therefore they ended it. Now, Rav Ashi, he disagrees. He says, no. She should give the ring back because she's the one that backed out. And what's with the concern about people are going to think it was never conditioned in the first place? Not true. Gita Mechichela, the divorce document that the chasen has to give to the kala after erusin, will prove that it was a condition, because why else would they need a get? Which the Gemara responds back and says, no, v'hadu Rav Ashi b'dusahi. This statement of Rav Ashi is mistaken. Deka d'shama b'ha, because there are those who might hear that the condition that the ring was given back, and thus assume that the kedushin never took effect, and because they might not hear regarding the get that he gave her, and therefore, that in all situations, the kedushin is not given back. She has to hold on to it so that people don't entertain the thought that possibly she was never engaged in the first place and think that he's still permitted to the sister. Now the Gemara continues to explain the halacha of our Mishnah that gave the rationale. Why is it that if the father had sent one of the sons as shoshpinis, which is a gift that he gives to his friend by his chuppah, which is obligated to be paid back, that when it gets paid back after the father's death, it does not go to that son who had given to the friend, but rather it's le'emtza, it's shared by all the brothers. So the Mishnah explains shashoshbinis nigvis bebesdin, because it's considered like a debt owed to the father. It's owned by the tuus rabbis, by the family, not to that individual child, because it could even be collected in court, like a loan, as the Gemara is going to explain. As the Gemara quotes, Tana Banan, we learn the Braisa, chamisha dvarim nemer b'shoshbinis. There are five laws that are said regards to this concept of shoshbinis. First of all, nigvis bebezin, it could actually be, it's a real debt. It's something that can be collected in court. V'chayzeres b'einasa, and it has to be given back in the appropriate time, meaning when the one who had given to his friend, when that original guy gets married, that then his shishbin, his friend, has to give back what he'd given, but not before that time. Third of all, v'ein b'mishum ribis, there is no halachic problem of ribis, of let's say, when, if you're considering it like a loan, as we're going to describe, he gave him money, now he's giving him back money by his chasen, he's giving him back more than what he got. Usually, if that was a real loan, it would be considered a problem of ribis. Here it's not considered a halachic problem of interest on what he was given. Fourth of all, as we continue the top of Amud Beis, Veina Shvi'is Misham Tasa. So too, if let's say the Shemitah year passed by in between when this guy had given him for his chasna and this guy didn't get married yet to give him back by his chasna, even though we're considering this somewhat like a loan, the Shemitah year usually cancels the loans. It does not cancel this obligation of the shoshbin. And the fifth principle is v'ina b'chayr nitl b'pishnayim. The firstborn, although like we said that, and like we said in the halacha of the Mishnah, when it gets paid back le'emtza, to the middle, to all the children, which generally the firstborn takes a double portion of whatever is in the father's estate, this shushbinis that gets paid back, the Bukhar does not take a double portion of that. And the Gemara explains all these five halachas. Nigvis bebezdin, as we explained the principle in our Mishnah, that's why when it gets paid back to the father, because it's owed to the father, it's like a debt that's owed to him, and therefore it's part of the estate and not for that particular child, is like we said, because it's nigvis bebezdin, it could be collected in court, which actually the Rashbam adds to the Girsa, where the Gemara is also going to explain the second principle of v'chezeres b'inasa. And that also, why is it that something that's only payback in that particular time when the other friend gets married, my time, what's the reason for these two halachas? Is kemil v'dami, because essentially we compare this halacha of shoshbinis like a loan. Where, moreover, not just like a loan, but also by the second principle, with that intention it was loaned, that it should be paid back at the time. What's the time limit? There's a loan, there's a certain time it's supposed to be paid back. Here it's when the first person has his simcha, and the payment of a loan goes after when the time was designated when the loan has to be paid up. Third principle is ba'imba mishum ribis. So then why is there no problem but if he pays him back more than what he got? That should be a problem about interest. Says the Gemara, is because the lava daita the hacha yavle. It's not with that intention that he's giving him more than what he got, because if he wants to, he can give him less. It's only because of the enjoyment of the friendship that he's so happy by his chasna that he gives him a bigger gift than what he got, but that's not based on because of the loan that he got. He's giving him more just because of the joy of the simcha. The fourth principle was ve'ena shvis misham tasa, that the shmita does not cancel that, quote, loan, is because the lekarina be lo yigas, because we cannot apply the principle that it applies to a loan, why it's canceled in the seventh year, which says that he's now go ahead and pursue him to claim the loan that he had lent him, which the halacha tells us he cannot press him in court in the Shemitah year. Now, in this situation, since the time has not yet come until that guy actually, as we said before, until he marries a woman, and only then is the obligation for him to pay it up, where that cannot be collected in court up until the time that's designated, which is the Gemara tells him, Sechdes Makis of Gimel Mabez, that if someone lends his friend a loan for 10 years, the Shemitah year does not cancel that loan, because it's not yet time for it to say that you cannot be Yigais, which is saying that even though you would normally be allowed to, here you cannot because the Shemitah year, here you can't be anyway, it's not due yet. So to the situation here where the time for paying up the Shoshbinis is only after the Shemitah year, because it's only when that guy gets married, so therefore since in the Shemitah year it's not yet time, because he didn't get married, so therefore it doesn't apply Le'igas, and therefore it does not cancel out that, quote, loan of the Shoshbinis. And the fifth principle, it says, Ve'ina b'chor nitl pishnayim, that the firstborn, when the Shoshbinis is paid back after the father had died, which all the children share that payment, the firstborn does not take a double portion, because the havalei ro'u, because it's considered something that's fit for the father to get. It's something that's owed to him, but he's not yet in possession of it. And the halacha was paskin, as we said on Kaf Chofei Mabez, that ve'ena b'char naito, the first one does not take a double portion in a loan, b'ro k'b'muchzik, and something that's fit for the father to have, which is owed to him, as he does take a double portion by something that the father was already in possession of when he died, whether the collection is with land or whether it's with money, and therefore this, which the father was not in possession of, although it was owed to him at the time of the death, therefore, the firstborn does not take a double portion, as he does by, just like he doesn't take by loan, so too by the shoshbinis. Now, Amar Rav Kahane says, "Kalala de shoshbinisa." The general rule that applies to this shoshbinis of the payment that the one who received the gift from his friend that rejoiced with him by his wedding has to pay it back. He explains as follows: Hava b'masa, if the one that has the obligation to pay back the shoshbinis was in this city at the time when his friend got married to his wife, and he didn't come to the simcha, ibaydli lemesa. He has to go ahead and bring it, and it can be collected in court if he doesn't bring him back the gift that he owes him. Shoma kol tavla. Let's say he heard the ringing of the bells, where they used to ring the bells that people should come and rejoice with the chasen. Again, ibaydli lemesa, he should have come. Now, loy shoma kol tavla. Let's say he didn't hear the sound of the bells. He didn't know this guy's getting married. So, says the Gemara, ibaydli ledu'ui. So, really, the chasen should have notified him, should have invited the friend that he had rejoiced with him. He should have invited him to come to his chasna. Now, for the fact that he did not notify him, terumis islay. So his friend has complaints against him, as Igmar will explain, that saying, wait a second, you came to my chasna and you brought stuff. I would be willing to come and give you a gift back, but why didn't you invite me? I had no clue that you were getting married. In spite of that, says the Gemara, shalumi mishalim, he still has to go ahead and pay back the shushbinis that he owes him. Now, on that, asks the Gemara, but va'ad kama? Well, up until what extent? Because most definitely he could diminish the amount of the gift that he owes his friend from the fact of that he didn't eat by his chasna. Because normally, yeah, you come and you bring gifts, but you consume some of what you bring. You bring a good bottle of wine, but you end up drinking half of it as the guest. So here, where he wasn't notified about the wedding, although he has to pay back the shoshbinis, but how much? So Abai explains that nogu b'nei genonim, the custom of those who come to the chuppah, meaning the friends, the shoshbinim, is as follows. Ad zuza, if the gift that he owes him is up until a zuz, aise b'chapei achli b'karse. what he brings in his hand is what he eats in his stomach. In other words, he would have consumed up to a zuz worth at the festive meal anyway. And therefore, if let's say all he owed was a zuz, so that's how much he could take away from the amount that he owes of the Shashbinis. And in that case, he actually wouldn't owe him anything. Adarba, if he was obligated to pay back a gift of four zuzim for his Shashbinis, then Mishalim Paga. Then he has to give him half of that, because since he would have brought a gift that he owed him of four zuz, so the common practice was that if you're bringing such a large gift, then they would feed him more than just a zuz. They would feed him two zuz worth. Now, since he was not invited and he didn't know about it and he didn't eat, so you could take away what he would have eaten, which is two zuz, from the four zuz, so he has to give him two zuz. Mikam ve'elach, from here and on, meaning the bigger the gifts are that he would have owed him, how much do you diminish? Inish kechashivut, say every man according to his distinguishing, meaning according to how big the gift was, they would have given him more delicacies and food. So whatever that amount is, proportionately, that's how much he could take away from the amount of the shashbinis according to how much he would have eaten had he brought that gift. So the bigger the gift, they would have given him more. So you got to give more, but you could take away a certain proportion amount that he would have eaten. More continues on these halachas of shashbinis. Tarnabon lenda b'raisa. Asi imay b'pumbi. If the original friend had given and he had celebrated with a big aplomb, with a big, huge simcha, they made a huge, tremendous wedding. Now, the original friend who had given the gift, who now he himself is getting married, ubikash lasis imay b'tzinna. Now, he wants to, that his friend should pay him back now at a more modest private wedding, either because it's a time of travail for the Jewish people, or because he doesn't want to spend too much on the wedding expenses and he doesn't want to have so much food over there. On that, says the Braisa, Yochel Loimaloi, so the one who already received the gift that has to pay it back could tell the original friend, look, Bepumbi Esemach, I'm going to celebrate back with you at a huge festive wedding, Kederch Shasisimi, just like you did for me. Meaning, I want to rejoice with you with a huge extra simcha, just like you did for me. And that's the same principle that follows all along, meaning to say, he only owes him exactly how it was done for him. If it changes, whether more or less, he could say, well, I'm not going to pay you back. It's only the way you did for me that I owe for you. So to asi may be besula. If let's say he was done when he had married a besula, ubikish lasi may bamana. Now his original friend who had given them the gift, he wants to marry a widow. He could tell him, look, besula esemach kederech shasi semi. I'm only going to give you back the gift if you marry a besula, just like you did for me when I married a besula. Asa may bishnia. Let's say he did for him when he had married his second wife. Ubikish lasi may birshaina. Now that friend had never gotten married. He's marrying his first wife. Wants him to now give him the gift back. The guy could tell him, no. When you marry another wife, which will be your second one, then I'll do for you. Because just like you did for me, I'm not going to do for more for you than you did for me, which is marrying a second wife. Which is the same principle that the first wife is a bigger simcha. I don't want such a big simcha. By me, it was my second wife. I'm going to do for you only by your second wife too. Let's say asim ba'achas. He had done for him when he married one woman. Now that original friend wants him to compensate him now, reimburse him now with the gift when he's marrying two women. Again, Yochalaimel, he could tell him, I'm going to only do for you by one woman like you had done for me for one woman, not by you. I'm not going to repay you now that you're marrying two women. It's not the same exact. Related type of discussion in regards to this concept that we had mentioned, Bepumbi, regarding things that are big, huge splashes versus things that are more modest, just relate on that concept. The Gemara begins talking about Luna Braisa. Atir Nixon, someone that's wealthy with properties, meaning from fields and vineyards and olive groves which are visible to people, so to Atir Pumbi, also the same concept, someone that's wealthy with things that are very revealed. Like, for example, someone has a lot of animals that everyone knows about, you could see his whole flock. Zehu Bal HaGadis, that would be a metaphor for someone that's knows the teachings of homiletics, meaning that he darshans, he expounds, he lectures in all the festivities and all the simchas on Yom Tov, and everyone gathers to hear him, and his voice of wisdom is heard, which this teaching is coming to tell us that since agadas don't need very much insight and analytics, so he could darshan wherever he is, so therefore everyone hears about him because he lectures. It's not so hard to lecture. Atur Sloim, someone that's wealthy from currency, which a shulchani, a money changer, who's constantly making money by changing monies. And after Tekoya, which is, there was a city named Tekoya, which from there they would bring the oil for the menachis. Zehu bal pilpul, that would be a metaphor for someone that's involved in dialectics, someone that is mafalful. he's constantly creating chidushim, which is similar to the one who gets money from currency and oil. They compare it to the Baal Pilpul because those types of professions are constantly, every single day, making changes, making increase in their money, which is the same thing with the one who does Pilpul, who finds many new chidushim every single day, just like those who bring oil from Tekaya and the money changers. Atir Meshach, which the word Meshach is like the translation of Anshe Midois, is translated as Anshe Mishchan, which means to say something that's wealthy from things that are measured. For example, like grain, which there it's not like money changers. You're not making the money constantly every single day. Rather, the grain you take and you measure and you store in the storehouses, so when it comes time to sell, then you sell and you make a lot of money, which is the same idea of Atir Kamas, which is like from the words of Kamos Imadi, something that's gathered together, that's put in the storehouse. So Zehu Baal Shmois, that is the one who knows the teachings of and halachas of the Amiron, which is, he holds on to it. It's not so revealed. But when it comes time to Paskin, then he suddenly reveals all his teachings. Everyone's like, wow, then he makes a big, huge splash, makes all his money, like the one who sells grain. He holds on to it, and then he sells it. Now, Hakol Tzricha L'mar Chitayna, but everybody needs the master of the wheat, meaning everyone has to come and have bread. They have to come on to the one who has the wheat, which that's referring to Gemara, which that is the sugyas of the Talmud, and which resolves the contradictions of Mishnayis and Brises, which is the what's called the bread, the meat and potatoes of the Talmud, which is without the Talmud, then you can't learn halacha from the Mishnah, as the Gemara says in Saita, that Tanoim Amavali Olam mix up the world because you don't understand that Mishnah says like that, and that Mishnah says like that, which is the primary, the bread of the Gemara. But later on this concept, Amr Abzeir, Amr Ravi says, Ma'adach said, what does it mean the Pasuk in Mishlei that says, Kol Yimei Ani Roim? All the days of the pauper are bad. Zeh Baal Talmud, that refers to the one who learns Talmud because he kills himself to focus and to understand the halachas and to resolve all the contradictions that are inherent in the Mishnayis. So it's difficult. But Tov Lev Mishnah Talmud, but a good heart has a constant festivities. Zeh Baal Mishnah, that refers to one who learns Mishnayis, which is just simple. It just has the halacha and it's something that's, you don't have to break your head over like a piece of Talmud. Now, Rava Amar Ibchi, he actually says the exact opposite. He says, Kol Yimei Ani Roim actually refers to the one who learns Mishnayis. And the reason why it's difficult for the one who learns Mishnayis is because he can't paskin halacha from his Mishnayis. And also when he sees that one Mishnah disagrees in the other one, he doesn't know how to resolve it. And we're to the contrary, Toiv Lev Mishnah Talmud, that refers to the one who learns Talmud because he knows the principles of the Mishnayis and he's proficient in their reasonings and he could paskin halacha l'maisa, so for him it's good. And because he knows the underlying principles and knows how to resolve things. Now, that the way Rava interprets the pasuk of Mishlei, that Tevle Mishnah Talmud is referring to that Gemara is better than Mishnah, says the Gemara, V'hainid Amar Rav Misharish Mishmei de Rava, that's similar that Rav Misharish had said over the name of Rava, interpreting a different pasuk. That Ma'adach said, what does it mean a pasuk in Kehelis that says, Matsiya Avonim Ye'otze Behem, the one who quarries the stone will be perturbed by them, and Bekea Eitzim Yisokin Bam, and the one who breaks the wood will be warmed by them. He'll have the wood to warm it. What does that mean? So, Masiya Avon Mi'atzvim, the one who quarries the stone will be Ya'atzib, which is like a terminology in Bereshis, be Tzavim Techlena, that you'll eat it warily. What does it mean that it wears you down? Elo Balei Mishnah, that refers to those who learn Mishnayis, where they learn Mishnayis all day and they only have pain from it because they're bothered by the reasonings and they don't know how to explain it. Whereas Bekea Eitzim Yisakin Bam, those who chop the wood, they'll be warmed by it, as we find in Malachim Aleph, Atila Melch Sekenis, the woman that warmed him, meaning that he has benefit from it. Elo Bala Talmud, that refers to those who learn Talmud, where they chop down the wood, they break it down to its primary principles, and then they can warm themselves from it because they understand it and they can pass it from it. I think Gemara brings different interpretations in this passage that we quoted from Mishlei. Reb Chanin Amar, he says, Kol Yimei Ani Ram, all the days of the pauper are bad. That refers to someone that has a bad wife. But Toiv Lev Mishnah Talmud, the one who has a good heart, is constantly rejoicing. Talks about someone that has a good wife. Rabbi Yanam, he gives a different interpretation. All the days of the pauper are bad. This refers to someone that's a very delicate person, that he gets disgusted by anything that's a little bit not perfect. Whatever he sees, he gets repulsed. That's a bad life. But Toiv Lev Mishnah Talmud, someone that has a good heart, is constantly has festivities. Zeh Shetayta Yafa, that's someone that could tolerate, is a very tolerant person, that it doesn't bother him if things are a little disgusting or a little out of place. Rabbi Yechonam, he says, Kol Yimei Ani Ro'am, all the days of the pauper are bad, Zeh Rachman. That refers to someone that's a very merciful type of a person, that whatever he sees, oh, he cries over it, he's a Nebuch, and he's so pained by everything, that's bad. But Tevel Le Mishnah Tam, someone that's a good heart, is constantly rejoicing, Zeh Achzari, that's someone that is foreign, that's cruel, that stays away from things, that he has a good time, because he's not bothered by things. Rabbi Shimon Levi, he says, Kol Yimei Ani Ro'am, all the days of the pauper are bad, that refers to someone that has very limited consciousness, meaning to say he's very, he gets upset easily, he's very begrudging, which in for himself or for others, he has very limited consciousness. But Tevle Mr. Taman, and the good heart is constantly has festivities, that's someone that has a more broader perspective and perception, that's someone that has an easier time. Now, the Gemara actually asks, as we continue to talk about Menbob Med Aleph, he says, he was medayik, the words of the pasuk, says, Kol Yimei Ani Ro'am, all the days of the pauper are bad. No, all the days of the pauper are bad, but v'ikar Shabbos is v'yom tayim, there's Shabbos and Yom Tiv, which they have food and they have delicacies, because actually the tzedakah requires that we give out to the paupers every Erev Shabbos, food for Shabbos. So that should be, there are some days that are good for him, which says Rabbi Yeshua, and he continues, and the answer is, he says, no, Kiddush Shmuel. Because the pasuk is alluding to what the concept that Shmuel had said. Amar Shmuel, he said, Shinu Veses, a change of regularity, which applies to a poor person, that all 6 days of the week, he's eating dry bread, and the Shabbos, suddenly his diet changes, and he's eating meat, is Tchilas Chayli, it's the beginning of illness, which he starts getting sick, and which some say possibly that's intestinal sickness, is where it's overdone. So even Shabbos and Yom Tiv is also bad for the poor person. Now, Ksiv b'Sefer ben Sira is written in Sefer ben Sira, which is one of the earlier writings, which is not part of the Talmud itself, but have some wise teachings. He quotes as follows. He says, Shlomo HaMelech wrote as recorded, Kol Yimei Ani Ro'am, that all the days of the pauper are bad, but what the inference is, at nighttime when he's sleeping, then he has some manucha, then he has some rest. But on that, ben Sira Emre says, but ben Sira says, Af Leilis, even the nights of the pauper, he has no rest. Why? Because Bishuffle Gagam Gagai, his roof is lower than everyone else's roof. He has barely a hut. Mimtar Gagam Lagagai, therefore the rain from the upper roofs rain down on his roof. So it comes out that on a rainy day, even at nighttime, he's bothered by the drip, drip, drip on his roof. And so to Barum Harim Karmai, on the highest mountains is his vineyard. May Afar Karma Lakram, and therefore what happens is that the earth, the fertilizer that he had on his vineyard, which is on the highest mountains, the wind comes and blows it down and it falls into the other people's vineyards that are lower down because he can't afford good real estate. He has a shaky mountain up on the top of the rocky area where the wealthy don't want, and therefore comes down and the wind and blows down from his vineyard down to that of the wealthy people, which turns out that there's never a good time for the poor man, not by nighttime, not by daytime. Kol Yimei Ani Ro'am, not only day or night, but even Shabbos and Yom Tov.